Good morning, good afternoon, good first snowflakes for some of you. In today's episode, we'll talk about newcomers and immigrant philanthropy with Dr. Catherine Pearl, Chair of the Entrepreneurship, Marketing, and Social Innovation Department at Mount Royal University. Now, stretch, laugh, and make yourself a good hot chocolate because the Feel Lab podcast starts now.
I'm Associate Professor of Social Innovation and more recently appointed the Department Chair of Entrepreneurship, Marketing, and Social Innovation at the Bissett School of Business at Mount Royal University out of Calgary, Alberta. And I guess, to be honest, I have a bit of a sordid past in that I came to academia after working in industry for close to 20 years, as well as running a registered charity that operated a social enterprise. And so as a result, my path to academia has been somewhat non-traditional, to say the least. So that's me.
And how do you feel about it?
I think the field experience, particularly running a charity, has really informed and built my interest in philanthropy because, of course, as you probably know, potentially some of your listeners, the social economy or registered charities are really dependent on funding that comes from philanthropic organizations, philanthropic individuals, grants, as well as donors right across Canada. I guess in terms of research, I'd have to say, again, my time working as the CEO of the registered charity really did inform a lot of that background. But probably one of the more interesting things that sort of influenced me has been a case study that I published a few years ago called Windmill Microlending. It's based on a charity, actually, that was started in Calgary, but now is right across the country. And what it does is it provides microloans to professionally trained newcomers that have not been able to basically work in the field that they were hoping to work in when they came to Canada. And so that in particular really started me to consider deeply what's the impact in terms of philanthropy for newcomers and what does that look like for individuals that came to Canada 25 years ago versus individuals that have come to Canada over the last 3 years or 4 years or whatever. So that was the first kind of piece that kind of impacted my decision to look at this topic in particular. And then the other thing I think that's kind of interesting is I teach a course called Vivacity, and it's a course that looks at civic innovation. And in particular, we look at a pressing wicked question in the city of Calgary. And so this past year, the question that my class and I looked at was how might we mitigate the barriers and challenges that immigrants and newcomers face when they actually move to Calgary. And so that really, those two pieces in particular has really informed the direction of this research and really inspired us to do a lit review of what, in fact, philanthropy looks like, what the landscape looks like for newcomers and immigrants to Canada.
Well, talking about research, let's dive directly into the PhilLab research that is called What Are the Antecedent Factors That Influence Immigrants and Newcomers' Philanthropic Practices and Understanding in Canada. Can you elaborate on what you discovered and took away from your work?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, it wasn't just me. It was a team of actually three colleagues, Dr. Reza Chowdhury, Tashfeen Hussain, and our research assistant, Linda Symes, who were really incredible to work with. And some of the key pieces that we found, and again, this is part of a larger study that we'll be running in Alberta, where we're going to look in depth at some of these factors. But based on our lit review, some of the more interesting points or key insights were, first of all, Canada's immigration population, no surprise, is very diverse, but it's also quite heterogeneous, and certainly one size doesn't fit all. And a lot of the time, while that may not surprise people, if you look at the literature in particular and some of the available data, there's a real propensity to group newcomers and immigrants into one big bucket, so to speak, and that really causes us to lose a lot of the nuance that exists across different communities or ethnic groups. And the second piece that we observed was that if you look at data from about 2000 to 2022, almost 6 million people immigrated to Canada over that 22-year period. And if you overlay data from the more recent 2021 census, that has changed and moved into 8.3 million foreign-born people, or, as we know, a quarter of our of the country's population, and they identified their country of birth, again, the 8.3 million people, India, Philippines, China, the United Kingdom, and the United States, and a number of other ones. But those were the big sort of countries that were represented by newcomers to Canada. And then third, which is also quite interesting, was we've seen a dramatic increase in immigration, no question. When you look at the fact that close to 500,000 people immigrated to Canada in 2021 alone. I think it was 492,000 individuals. And so the numbers are climbing, and we're really starting to see a bit of a hockey stick curve, to keep the Canadian headspace here, in the data, as well as noticing that the countries of origin are also shifting. So away from maybe India and the Philippines, but now including countries like such as Pakistan, Hong Kong, Italy, Iran, and Vietnam. So there's a real shift and a real movement across the types of individuals that are choosing to come to Canada. And of course, when we look at 2022 in particular, we saw close to 150,000 immigrants and newcomers coming from the Ukraine. So it's quite a fluid environment right now. And so really, all to say, it's not surprising to learn that as local communities become more diverse, local charities and nonprofits must be very mindful of how these shifts can indeed impact their respective organizations, and whether that is the type of nature of the services that are provided, the causes that different ethnic groups tend to support, or the differing views of what giving really entails and what philanthropy means, along with what does volunteer engagement look like for these different groups of individuals who are now coming to Canada.
Yeah, and I think it ties well to my next question, which is, how would you describe newcomers and immigrant philanthropy? I feel that you've stated some strong points, which is the shift. There's a huge shift in the previous years about the country of origin. But also, is there a change in the approach that the strong and weakest points that it creates, and are foundations reacting more to some to some newcomers more than others? How is this movement impacting philanthropy all in all?
Mm-hmm. Great question. First and foremost, again, and this kind of surprised me, to be honest with you, what we're seeing is a much more diverse workplace. And it's not just in the mainstream economy. In fact, it's really prevalent across the social sector or the nonprofit sector, depending on the language that you like to use. And I think the data that really surprised me was there's about 47% of Canada's nonprofit workforce in 2022 is comprised of immigrants and newcomers, which is quite amazing, because I mean, I used to work in it 20 years ago, and that was not the case. So as a result, from a charitable perspective or the social economy perspective, what that tells us is that these organizations in particular have terrific insight into the immigrant experience and what is needed to support Canadian newcomers, which we didn't have 20 years ago. Now, on the surface, I would suggest that's cause for celebration, I suppose. But in many instances, working in the nonprofit sector may not always be an individual's first choice. The money, the salary levels are quite often a little bit less than, or maybe substantively less than what you see in the mainstream economy. But often, individuals that are coming from another country, if they want to work in their chosen field, quite often they have to have a Canadian experience as in an employment relationship. And so they're prepared to work in the nonprofit sector to get that Canadian experience. And I guess the other part of this is they may choose to work, or they may not have a choice to work in the mainstream economy. And the nonprofit sector is potentially more open, maybe has fewer systemic barriers relative to discrimination, and maybe systemic barriers relative to the hiring practice in some of these more mainstream organizations. And so I guess the second point to be made here is the fact that sort of the negative weak point here is from 2010 to 2020, we saw fewer Canadians make official charitable donations. And that probably is cause for concern, because of course it's those charitable donations and philanthropy that fund a lot of these organizations and the work that our newcomers and immigrants are doing on behalf of the country. And so although some of that decline might have been due to COVID, it's also due to inflation, the cost of living increases, which again impacts newcomers and immigrants doubly as a result.
In terms of those numbers that you just pointed out, would it be in donation all in all, or depending on the sector that we are pointing, people are more picky, let's just call it that way, as to where they want to donate?
Yeah, you know, for sure. And there are examples of how individuals who were born in Canada have different causes that they support versus individuals from other countries. And there isn't so much a gap between donations, but rather a lot of the decisions made by immigrants and newcomers versus people born in Canada is the different lived experiences. And it seems, based on our research anyhow, it seems that the lived experience often informs the type of giving or philanthropy that takes place amongst these groups of individuals. And so if I think of a couple of examples for you. One thing that we noticed was that newcomers from war-torn countries, for example, or individuals fleeing persecution or areas experiencing climate disasters in particular, where they can, they choose to support a lot of the needs from their birth country. And so they might do that by working with international agencies and directing funds through those agencies to their country of birth. They might actually use personal remittances. So those are personal funds that are sent to relatives or friends in their country of birth quite often. Or there's through diaspora philanthropy, which is really money or goods that are donated for the social benefit of the country or the region where an individual may have been born or live for a period of time. And an example of that might be funding a school, funding a hospital or a health center in their local village or community. And so these differences are kind of interesting. The other part that we also observed was that the longer an individual has lived in Canada, the more they tend to, over time, start to support charities other than those of strictly their country of birth. They seem to kind of move towards some of the more common charities that Canadian-born individuals seems to support. And that was sort of a surprise, I think, for us. The other part that was kind of interesting was across generations, there seems to be a need to support organizations or the country of origin in particular. That appears to diminish with the second generation or third generation immigrants. And so they start to kind of look not at supporting causes that are related to their parents, for example, or grandparents' country of birth, but rather they're more interested in supporting causes in Canada, which is sort of fascinating, I thought.
And to add to those numbers, I was wondering, are foundations who are giving philanthropic donations to specific causes that relates to newcomers and immigrant philanthropy, can we sense trust in the donations? Simply because, for example, some foundations can be really picky about the types of donation and the frame that the organization can really spend. I can really spend that money. But in newcomers and immigrant philanthropy, since you specified that there's a lot of newcomers and immigrants that work for those organizations and know what, in a respective degree, know what is needed in that specific field. Do we feel that trust that in the relationship between foundations and organizations?
I must admit, I'm not as familiar with the foundation versus the charitable organization, but my sense would be that we would be foolish not to listen to the individuals who've actually been on the ground in some of these different. And I suspect with many foundations, there is a process in which they do vet through their proposals, through the grant proposals in particular, the feedback that they receive from applicants. And I would like to think that there is trust going both ways, to be honest with you, Joey. I think that some of the things that we're seeing around the world today, I think the issue gets to be there's so much demand and there's probably not enough supply of funding, which puts incredible pressure on foundations to kind of prioritize, okay, where do we want to be? How can we support? Can we support, given the funds are probably quite limited?
For me, on my side, I think it just makes me think. And also in a context where, like you said earlier, since the immigration and the newcomers keep on changing across time, simply because, like you said, we tend to put them all in the same basket, but actually that basket is always in movement inside of it. And then since you specified the priority is how can you prioritize? What are the different elements that makes you think about that priority? And I think it's a great question to kind of ask ourselves as a foundation, but also as a donee, how can we be informed, and how can we make sure that every dollar that we give really matters? And I mean, all in all, I do believe that every dollar we give matters all just in general. But I think it's just a beautiful conversation we can have with ourselves about how to prioritize, and also in that specific field.
Yeah. The other thing that's kind of interesting is if you imagine Canada did a research study about a year ago, and they looked at sort of the causes that are supported by individuals that were not born in Canada versus individuals born in Canada. And that was also a fascinating piece that we sort of discovered as part of our study, was that once again, over time, so the causes that individuals support when they've just arrived or been here for 3 years is quite often very different than the causes that they tend to support after being in Canada for 10 years. And it more closely kind of compares or reflects what Canadians that were born in Canada basically support. So it's almost like living in Canada over time, everyone's moving towards the same important causes that they want to support, which I thought was kind of interesting because I didn't expect that at all, to be honest with you. I sort of thought, though, if I was born in, I don't know, in a war-torn country and I left that country to come to Canada, I probably would always want to support it. But over time, it seems that softens a bit, recognizing that there still is probably funds that are going back to that country, but there does seem to be a little bit more movement in terms of the kind of causes that are supported by these groups, and it does seem to shift a bit towards what Canadians that are born in Canada tend to support.
And I do wonder, what are those causes that are more, I'll say, specific to Canadians, sort of Canadians' priorities or values, and all in all. I think it's very interesting to see how the word that you use, which is to sort of softens towards specific causes. I think it's just a beautiful research, and I hope you can share me the link, and I'll put it in the description of the episode, because I think it's really, it'd be interesting for people to really look at that research for more thoughts and research. Let's go to the next question, which is, you right now you work at, like you said, Mount Royal University. Has your experience there allowed you to grow your philanthropic perspective? And if so, how could you frame it from our themes perspective, which is newcomers and immigrant philanthropy?
Yeah, actually another great question, because it really was a pause, gave me time to pause about how does that impact what I've been doing at Mount Royal. So Mount Royal is really quite an ethnically diverse community of professors as well as students. And I have to say, this is particularly apparent in the field that I teach in, which is social innovation. And the other part of this is, because our classes are quite small, we are quite fortunate, to be honest, to be able to discuss some of these shifts. So many of my students have opportunities to share their lived experience, whether it is about the causes that are important to them from a philanthropic perspective, the causes that they actually support, whether it is as a volunteer or financially, or that of their family, because of course for students, involvement in philanthropy probably doesn't come to much later. They're still trying to pay tuition and books and all that other good stuff. But also it gives, I think, these students an opportunity, because we actually have a part of my introduction course that we talk about philanthropic activities and donations and what that means to the social economy. So sometimes what's really interesting in my classes is we talk about the differences that they've observed in the countries where maybe they're a first generation immigrant or a second generation immigrant, and what they've observed within their families, which is kind of interesting. So from a research perspective, when my colleagues and I started working on this piece of the project, we actually then started to think, okay, we want to go to the next level and look at this across Alberta, as opposed to like a lit review of what's the research telling us to date. And so we've already reached out to a number of community leaders in the province. We have a number of foundations that are also interested in supporting this project. And as well, as I mentioned, that study from Imagine Canada. Imagine Canada is also interested in supporting our work as well. So from a Mount Royal perspective, it really has fit nicely in terms of where we want to take the study and how important philanthropic activities are to Canada as well, and our newcomers and immigrants.
Jumping off of that, I was wondering, what advice would you give to someone with your field experience and academic perspective for people who'd like to work in the immigrant philanthropy sector? And also, we're talking to our audience right now, but also I'm curious about what you tell your own students.
Well, yeah, okay. I tell them the best experience is working in the nonprofit sector. I'm sort of biased, but I guess the couple of key points that I would keep in mind would be that we have to remember that the immigrant population is diverse, as I mentioned earlier, and not one size fits all. Each community is very, very different, whether it's from a religious background, which is from cultural practices. This all informs how we should be working with these individuals, and as well as the environment from which they left their country. It can be really very, very challenging for some of these individuals to kind of adapt to a different way of life, different priorities, all that other good stuff. And so from the perspective of a charity, I would suggest it's very important to understand the community you're working with, and particularly the clients that you're working with, in terms of where they're from, what's important to them, what they value. That kind of stuff I would really be focusing on. And it's only by understanding their needs, the needs of your clients, but also of your staff, if a lot of your staff includes individuals that have come from different countries, that you can try to provide a meaningful and useful services that will attract funders who are interested in supporting immigrant philanthropy. I kind of see the two of them kind of tied together, to be honest with you, Joey.
Well, it's beautiful. I think what I take from that is just the simplicity of listening on all possible sides. And sometimes it's always this very simple answer, but that is just beautiful to sort of remind ourselves when we think, and even more with people that have lived very harsh experiences and are fleeing from places that's, let's say, war-torn or things that we always see in the news but never can really experience it the same way as probably they lived it. So it's just a beautiful tip that we can...
Well, it's interesting. You remind me, because I had a student last term, Ashley, who had lived in a refugee camp for 3 years in Afghanistan before coming to Calgary. And it was truly amazing, because of course the students in my class that had not come from that particular part of the world were like mesmerized by some of the story. He didn't sort of tell us the whole story, but he was prepared to share amazing, amazing experiences, good and bad, with the students in the class. And I think it became so much more rich as a result of that. And it was sort of interesting from my perspective, because he was a very quiet young man to begin with. And then over the course of 3 months, you could just see him blossom, which was wonderful. So it really made me aware of how important post-secondary schools are to provide the environment for students to explore, to kind of not push themselves so much, but to be given a bit of a platform to share what they're able to share or not. So anyways, that was kind of probably one of my most interesting experiences over the last year or so, around having a lot of these students now coming to our university and sharing some of their experiences.
Well, I thank you for creating such a safe space, because just the idea that someone is ready to share his, her, or their story is always beautiful. And I think it's always this garden that if the teacher is ready to create a safe space, I think people are ready to blossom and to allow themselves to be vulnerable. And I think it's a very important subject to a lot of people, and vulnerability is not always easy. I think it's important to remember. And teachers like you, professors are a big part of that journey. So I thank you, actually, Catherine, for telling me that story. But on the behalf of being a student and hearing that beautiful story, let's wrap it up with our last question, which is, how do you see newcomers and immigrant philanthropy in 10 years from now?
Yeah, another interesting. I wish I had a crystal ball, but I don't. But my gut tells me that as Canada continues to grow its population through immigration, it'll become even more important to ensure that newcomers are able to contribute and work in their chosen field. And that's not always the case, as I'm sure you realize. And if we don't sort of support that evolution or provide those opportunities for the individuals who have chosen to come to Canada, have incredible skills that we need that will help us to not only generate more wealth collectively and individually, the trickle-down effect, I would suggest, would mean long-term there's a greater pool of potential donors and philanthropists going forward. The caveat, of course, would be that social economy actors will need to understand the shift and its potential impact on their organization. And so we really do need to be sensitive to the fact that many newcomers and immigrants are working in nonprofit organizations, and that the nonprofit organizations need to be responsive to not only the needs of their clients, but also the needs of their staff, and understand firsthand what causes are most important, how does volunteering in local communities impact the work of these organizations. And I guess, finally, the other part I think that's worth mentioning is the importance of engaging second-generation immigrant youth, whether it's in volunteerism, whether it's in philanthropic endeavors, because the research does point to the fact that individuals who volunteer as youth tend to also be more generous donors and philanthropists going forward.
That's our show. To continue the conversation around newcomers and immigrant philanthropy, join us on our different platforms for more content and share your comments. We'd like to thank Dr. Catherine Pearl for this precious conversation and PhilLab for hosting this educational podcast. I would also like to thank the amazing production team without whom this podcast wouldn't be possible. We have Catherine McDonald as head of production and Leonie Poulin as co-producer, researcher, and editor. Thank you again for being a part of our podcast community. Stay curious, compassionate, and courageous. Together, we can make a difference. Until next time, take care and goodbye.